Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby, sitting in for Virginia Prescott. Earlier this year, renowned neurologist Oliver Sacks died of cancer. Public radio listeners may know him from his many contributions to Radiolab, but many more will know him by his contributions to science. His detailed case histories on neurological disorders like Tourette syndrome and post-encephalitis, the latter which he tackled in his most famous book, Awakenings. Sacks was celebrated for his narrative style of writing and for putting an empathetic human touch on hard-to-grasp medical subjects. But some say that long, narrative-driven style of scientific inquiry is fading away. Christine Montross is an author, a practicing psychiatrist, and an assistant professor of psychiatry and human behavior at Brown University. In a recent essay for the Chronicle of Higher Education, Christine says case histories are being replaced by, quote, fetishism of data. And she joins us now to explain. Christine, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
So first of all, could you just explain what a case history or a case study is for listeners who may not be familiar with the term?
So case studies or case histories used to be the real cornerstone of medical education. And the most basic description of this would be that they would describe a person and a person's illness or injury, and then the professor or teacher or clinician who was presenting that case history would talk about what were the potential diagnoses, what were the potential courses of treatment, and share actually how the case evolved and went and what happened when we tried to treat the person that's presented. And often the patient presents sort of a typical illness course or course of injury. So, you know, when medical students are first learning about how to recognize a heart attack and distinguish it from, say, indigestion, you know, a case history might be presented and the students have to pay attention to key details to be able to ascertain the diagnosis. But case histories have also been used to describe real outliers, and they're often used for discussion amongst practicing physicians when a case is really difficult or poses diagnostic or treatment challenges as well.
And would that be something maybe like case studies have been written about, say, the Elephant Man?
Absolutely. So major discoveries have often been described in terms of case histories and case studies. So that would be one. You know, there are all kinds of neurologic studies that are described. You know, a famous one where a railroad worker was shot through the head with a piece of metal that he was working on, and the symptoms that emerged then from his brain injury and really taught us about some of the local functions of and workings of the brain.
You know, what's funny is you mentioned that case. I've heard about that case. So it seems to me that, you know, the case history can reach a general public, maybe in a way that, say, a scientific abstract or just a medical journal can't. So why do you think that they're falling out of fashion?
Well, I have two thoughts about that. I think you're absolutely right. I think that we've learned in many, many realms, politics included, right? We care about people and their plights more when there's a story associated with it instead of just a presentation of data. I think a couple of things have happened that have shifted the emphasis that we allow case histories to have. One is, as you mentioned in the intro, you know, Sienna Craig, an anthropologist at Dartmouth, has coined this term fetishism of data. And I do think that as medicine, in a good way, moves toward being evidence-based and really relying on algorithms and checklists to make sure that treatment is standardized and that important key steps aren't missed from a safety standpoint, there is a way in which we come to value these more algorithmic and number-driven approaches to medicine, when in reality, medicine still happens within the human body. Illness still occurs to people. And once we lose sight of the people, sometimes we lose sight of some of the really key elements of what's going on for them medically as well.
I'm speaking with Christine Montross. She's a practicing psychiatrist and assistant professor of psychiatry and human behavior at Brown University. In a recent essay for the Chronicle of Higher Education, Christine says the case history, once a staple of medical research, is falling out of fashion and being replaced by what she calls a fetishism of data. So this is the sort of subject that I think your average listener just isn't aware of, that case studies are fading away. How can you quantify that? I mean, how do you know that they're falling out of fashion?
So we see that in medical education. Medical specialties and students gather for either didactic lectures or also medical grand rounds. So these are our educational gatherings of a certain specialty or a certain medical school or hospital, and the real purpose is to teach. And it used to be that case histories and case narratives were really at the center of those gatherings, and they aren't any longer. Occasionally you'll have them, but much more frequently these are PowerPoint discussions of the trends of outcomes with certain medications or certain interventions, and the human story palpably feels like one that is less and less a part of the discussion.
Wow, that's so funny, given all the discussion that we have about the importance that doctors and physicians, you know, understand and relate to their patients in the same way that we almost talk about, like, police officers need to sort of be on the ground and understand the community and not just see it from a, you know, from a practicing point of view.
Well, and I think that there is a very pragmatic explanation for some of that part as well, and that is that as financial pressures increase within the healthcare systems, physicians have less and less and less time with their patients. And we've all felt this, right? The physical with our primary care doctors that used to last an hour is now maybe 25 or 30 minutes. My father-in-law complained that he went in recently for his physical and remained in his street clothes the whole time. I think that that as psychiatrists, we're reimbursed much more financially to provide a 15-minute medication visit to someone than we are to sit and do psychotherapy with them. So I also think we're missing out on the opportunity to hear our patients' stories directly from them in the course of our treatment with them.
So when do you think it goes too far, and when do we lose sight of that human element?
Well, I think losing sight of the human element means we've gone too far. I think that when we are looking at illness and the experience of illness as a set of numbers and data, we've lost sight of the fact that it happens to us and to our family members and to our friends. And I think we love to believe, both as patients and doctors, that the human body responds in very predictable ways to illness and injury. But we have all seen examples of people who have survived illnesses they never should have survived, and who have not survived wounds that should have been very easy to fix. And so the body does not always conform to the data. And one of the points that I think it's important not to lose sight of is that data really skews toward the mean. It represents an average, it represents an aggregate, and sometimes the most important things to be learned are the times when that doesn't adhere. What do we learn from the person who died from an illness that should never have been fatal? That might not be included in a set of data points because most people survive it, but really the real lesson to be learned for physicians in training and physicians in practice might be what happened in this person whose case did not conform to the data that we have.
Now, you have written a couple of books, so, and they themselves are sort of case studies, collections of case studies. Part of the idea here is to put a personal face on something that often is impersonal in other types of scientific literature. But what are the ethical considerations that need to be taken into account when you're writing about your patients?
There are many, of course, and there are people who say that physicians should not write about their patients under any circumstances. In fact, one of the most scathing statements about Oliver Sacks, who you mentioned at the beginning, was that he was a man who mistook his patients for a literary career, and that was a riff on his famous book, of course, Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat.
Right.
I think there are people that see writing about patients as inherently exploitative. I don't believe that that is true. I do believe it can be done respectfully. Medicine has a tradition of either really de-identifying patients so they're not recognizable, you know, no protected health information is disclosed, people aren't identifiable, or asking consent of their patients and making sure that you have a patient's permission to write about them. My perspective on this has been strengthened and enhanced by the fact that as a psychiatrist who works with hospitalized mentally ill patients, many, many of my patients are not in a position where they are capable of telling their story. And when I say that, I'm thinking about patients who are floridly psychotic, who are significantly disabled. I have intellectually disabled patients who are nonverbal. And I've grown increasingly frustrated by how that degree of voicelessness means that their stories are not represented in these important political and budgetary discussions that we have as a society. So I've come to view it as not just what are the responsibilities and risks inherent in writing about patients, but what are the responsibilities and risks inherent in not writing about these patients who we treat and the struggles that they endure.
Well, Christine, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
I really appreciate it. I enjoyed it.
Christine Montross is a practicing psychiatrist, an assistant professor of psychiatry and human behavior at Brown University. And you can learn about her own books and collections of case studies, body of work, and Falling Into the Fire. There's a link at wordofmouthradio.org. Marcela Gaviria survived a childhood cancer that nearly took her leg and has been dealing with complications related to that illness for the last 3 decades. Throughout that time, she's been seen by the same doctor and surgeon, Dempsey Springfield. Marcela and Dr. Springfield have lost count of just how many surgeries they've been through together, but when they sat down with StoryCorps, they remembered the very first one.
I think you started taking care of me when I was 12.
You were in the hospital to have a bone transplant.
I was pretty scared, I remember. And I think I survived a very sort of traumatic moment because you were so kind. What I remember about you were your bow ties. You just looked like such a southern gentleman, and you'd show up every morning with such a big smile, and you were so warm and gentle, and I wanted to get better for you. I wanted your surgery to work on me.
I really enjoy taking care of patients. That's probably what came across.
Well, I'd hate to count the amount of times you've operated on me, but every scar in my leg, I think, has something to do with you.
Well, I keep moving and you keep following.
Because I don't trust other doctors as much. And it's funny because when I was a kid, I would complain all the time about how I'd never get married.
I remember very distinctly we would have conversations about this.
Yeah, because, you know, I always wondered how difficult it would be for someone to sign up to my life. Well, I got married this year, and I wanted you to have the first dance. And that was just a way of celebrating the fact that a lot of what I'm able to do nowadays is because of your care.
Your wedding's the first wedding of a patient that I've ever gone to. So it's so rewarding to see that all of that, you know, getting up before the sun comes up to get to the hospital pays off. It wasn't squandered.
Well, I have a great surgeon that really cared to get it right. It's a beautiful thing. Thank you for doing all you did.
That was Marcela Gaviria and Dr. Dempsey Springfield for StoryCorps.